Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to episode 112 of Double Hop Beat, where we take the pulse of the beer and brewing scene. I'm James, a home brewer and craft beer enthusiast.
And I'm Shannon, a beer intermediate. This week, we're kind of doing a mix-up.
A mix-up.
A bag.
A mixed bag.
A mashing in bag.
I don't know what you're trying to say, but...
I was trying to get a beer-related mailbag, but that didn't really work out, so...
What we will be doing is we're going across the border to our neighbors to the south of Rhode Island, where I got to do my first homebrewing club meeting.
Yeah, you've done a lot of firsts, I feel like.
This year.
I was going to say this month, but yeah, this year. So how did the, do you want to talk about that first and then talk about some new gadgets and questions?
I guess I'll just jump into it then. Okay.
How was it, James? You came home very excited and I got multiple texts. While you were there, I did not join James, folks. Someone had to watch our toddler. So James went on his own to the homebrew club in Rhode Island. And I think you had a good time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was just a great experience overall. And the story of how that came to be was actually Steve, who was at one point, the president of the East Bay Homebrew Club and now vice president, had reached out to us on our Instagram page and just gave us a little blurb about what their homebrew club's about and that they would love to have us come check them out and either do a brew day or a collaboration of some sort. So after talking with Steve, I was like, yeah, let's definitely make something happen. And they were right across, you know, state lines, pretty close. It took only, I think, 45 minutes.
Yeah, it's probably about that.
From our area.
Which people are like, oh, that's not close to state lines. But Rhode Island, folks, if for those who don't know, is the smallest state in the country. So it's really not that far.
And it's only fitting because the East Bay Homebrew Club is considered the smallest homebrew club. And it was established in 2013. And they're out of Barrington, Rhode Island. And it was just a great experience overall. They're lucky enough to have a craft brewery that would host them, essentially, of basically allowing them to, they come, they open up the brewery just for them on a Monday night. Basically, Vigilant Brewing in Bristol, Rhode Island is what they call their home base. So what that means is, as I was starting to describe, is, you know, the brewery is kind enough to open their doors to the club and just kind of use the space without, and when I say use the space, I don't want people to have the misconception that they are allowing a homebrew club to use their brewing
equipment.
It's just literally kind of like if you think of a function hall.
Yeah.
Basically just allowing them to camp out in the main part of the brewery off hours.
Yeah, to host their meeting.
To host the meeting, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool of Vigilant Brewing to do. It's definitely a rarity, especially today, to find a craft brewery that's willing in their off days to kind of open up their doors. And, you know, it's just one of those great collaborations that I think needs to improve in our, in United States, of just allowing homebrew clubs to come in. And a lot of the crossover does happen. A lot of homebrewers do enter the craft brewery industry. So I don't know whether there was a tie there or where that connection kind of came about. But again, it was a great brewery to start. Just looking at their menu that they had, I've never been to that brewery before. It had a wide range of beer styles, from a rice lager. They had a pina colada sour.
Yep, I think you said I would like that one.
Yeah, a couple IPAs, a porter, a red ale, and a couple Belgian beers. So I was surprised by the diversity of beers Vigilant Brewing had. So we'll definitely have to go check them out again, that brewery, to kind of just scope out what their beers taste like. But actually, Mike, who's one of the brewers over there, shout out, Mike, to you at Vigilant Brewing. He was joined us for the meeting, and he was the one who opened the doors for us. And he was really adamant about sharing one of his brews, which I think is great. And that just shows that you can have that collaboration and that kind of insight going across from a homebrew level to also working at a craft brewery. And that's something I wish I had when I had worked at a craft brewery, of having that kind of, not mentor or tutor, but someone with me to kind of experiment with. And, you know, you might not be able to experiment on the big systems that where you work, but, you know, that knowledge and that brewing experience is something that I think is invaluable. And it's just a great resource to have.
Yeah, I think we've heard it from a couple of our recent guests talking about how the homebrew clubs really have changed their brewing experience and allowed them to grow and ask questions and have that community around them. So I think that's great. And you went, this was a Monday night. You said it was a smaller group of people, which was good. You felt more comfortable there with that. And you brought some of your beer because it was a tasting night. So what they usually do is they'll do one night, one meeting is where they will brew like all together, right? On a system that they share. And then they'll take the mash home and do their own additives and things like that.
Yeah. So correct? This was one of the cool things that I really liked about how this homebrew club operated. And they had explained that essentially what they'll do is they'll have one of their meetings dedicated to bring in what you brew.
Mm-hmm.
So you bring in your list of beers, what you've brewed, and you kind of talk about the recipe, you talk about the brew day, if there's anything you really want to work on with the beer, or just open feedback. And they were really adamant about keeping open feedback, not being afraid of, you know, what other people might think. And I really love that. It was definitely, mm-hmm. I didn't feel the pressure when I, you know, I was really worried, like, how is this homebrew club going to operate? Is it going to be one of those of, I'm going to show up and they're just talking about, oh, how's Jim and the kids? How's Michelle doing?
Like, you didn't want
it
to be very, like, clicky, like, inside stories,
or just no introduction whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, you feel like a stranger, which is 99% of the reason why people don't join homebrew clubs.
I would say anything in general.
Or anything in general. You don't want to feel isolated if you haven't been with it or mm-hmm. know somebody that's in the club. So I didn't know anybody going mm-hmm. into this other than just a couple conversations with Steve. So I was going in blind I would anyone else that would be wanting to join a homebrew club. So what I really did appreciate was that Steve and Chris, who's the president now, had met me outside the brewery before a little bit before everyone showed up to China to just give me the lay of the mm-hmm. land of how long they've been a homebrew club, kind of how their meetings go, just to kind of get me acclimated as well, which made me feel a little bit better too, you know, initially feeling like, okay, they want to include me in the process, not being a member mm-hmm. myself. But they were so inclusive that, you know, a lot of times you think, oh, people won't share recipes. People won't give you good feedback on your beer. And I found quite the opposite with this homebrew. But as you were going back to their setup.
Yeah, I was explaining how they usually do their meetings.
So we'll actually talk about what happened at the meeting that I went to, and then we'll talk about what their other meeting entails. So in this case, all the members would show up, and currently they're around 12 members. Very small homebrew club, which I love. I love that we set up one long table so everyone can just be at one table, which is really nice. And I think it allowed us all to focus in on what each person had brought to the table. Mm-hmm. And this is where my lack of experience with how it worked. So before the homebrew club, I'm like, yeah, I'll bring one of my beers. And not knowing how many people were going to in this club, how much beer is actually consumed at the club. I had canned up a full 4-pack of mm-hmm. 16-ounce beer. So I, you know, figured if there's at least 10 people that.
Yeah. And you weren't sure how big the pours were going to be and all that.
Actually, no, I brought
packs. You bought two types of beer, 2 4-packs.
Well, no, my original plan was to bring 2 different style beers. However, when I was canning, I ran out of time. So I was like, I'm going to be late if I switch over my keg to can up my other style. So I ended up bringing in my spiced ale, which is now mm-hmm. like a version 5 recipe. And that's one that one of our friends, Kurt, really enjoys. This was the 8% version of mm-hmm. that beer. And I really did want solid feedback on it. And I think it's a great beer, drinkable beer. So I wanted to get refinements or how I can fine tune it. Or just see if other people enjoyed it as much as our friends do and I do. And so I brought 2 4-packs and I roll up there with 2 4-packs of 16-ounce cans. And then, you know, they started going through their business, which I liked. They started with their agenda, kind of mm-hmm. open topics.
Yeah, like a regular meeting would be.
Yeah, how their competitions have gone, what competitions they might want to enter as a mm-hmm. homebrew club. And then what I think was really smart of them to do was it just wasn't rapid fire of trying everybody's beer. How mm-hmm. they set it up was they would ask everybody what style beer they were bringing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they ordered them from light to dark, kind of keeping styles similar styles and not so your palate wouldn't be overtaken by... Yep.
As we mentioned in our recent episode about how to pick a pint.
There we go. Yep. Absolutely. And so I really did think that those fine details really made a difference in the experience. And luckily, I was like, well, what if my beer is first or last? Or how good is my beer going to stack up to, you know, this homebrew club that has won awards before? And many of their members mm-hmm. have been in the industry for a long time. So, you know, but I wasn't concerned about it. Everyone seemed just very relaxed and very welcoming. So I didn't feel that kind of pressure of, well, what if my beer is terrible? I was actually hoping my beer would be the worst one out of the group. So then I would get the most feedback out of the homebrew club. So yeah, we tried. Everyone started light to dark. And there was just a great diversity in styles. There was maybe one or two IPAs, which I was very shocked by. And they even had meads and ciders, which I thought was incredible. Yep. And I think that's something that a lot of homebrew clubs could incorporate as well, because there is that big crossover of, you know, making a mead, the process, or making a cider. And usually the people who make beer also want to dabble in mead, cider, mm-hmm. wine, and all different things. So I'm glad that there was a good variety in this group of just 12 people. Mm-hmm. So the amount of variety I was blown away by, number one. And number two, they were just really standout beers. I was impressed with every single beer that I had. There wasn't a single beer that I had that was undrinkable. And the only one that I redeemed undrinkable was the one just personal preference. I'm not a jalapeno.
Oh, the one that's spiced, spicy. Yeah.
Tequila flavored.
But for what it was, it was good.
So I just passed on it because I didn't want to give my judgment on someone's beer if I was going into it of like, yeah, I'm not even going to be able to like pick out anything.
I would love to see your face if you actually tried that beer.
Now that would be a beer that you would love.
I would like it. I feel like you would like be lit on fire the second you drink it.
Yeah, no, definitely. Like they popped open the bottle and I could smell the tequila. Jalapeno. I could then get the tingle in my nose of the jalapeno as I was passing it around the table. And back when I talk about I brought too much. So this homebrew club, what they do is they have little taster glasses and they fill it maybe not even an inch in the taster glass. So it's not even, I'd say it was maybe an ounce a person.
Yeah.
So they just, every member had brought one or maybe two bottles max. Most were just bottles. I think they Steve had brought cans. So he had just one or two cans for 12 people. And
rolling in eight deep.
And I rolled in eight deep. Yeah, exactly. And I was so a little nervous so that like I had popped them open. Like I had popped four open before they'd actually got started.
James was like, let's start this party.
I'd already overcommitted. So there was just so much left over my beer. And then I, you know, gave out the other four pack of unopened ones for the people that really wanted it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just really excited to try all their different styles and to hear what it took to make those different styles that I've never brewed before. Some standouts were a barrel-aged porter with oak chips. There was a Marzen. There was a New Zealand hopped Pilsner was the goal of the beer. But by the time he got done with it, he said it had turned into a West Coast IPA.
Just transformed like a butterfly.
So, which is the great thing about homebrewing, right? Like, happy experiments, great, good experiments. So he was a little disappointed that, oh yeah, you know, I had these great New Zealand hops. I really wanted to make a New Zealand hop Pilsner, but it turned out it was very, the bitterness and everything else that happened with the beer, it's to a West Coast IPA's style.
Yeah.
There was a juniper mead, which I really enjoyed.
Oh, wow.
That was a standout. They had a dry cider. And my other favorite showstopper beer to me was a ginger cinnamon sour.
I'm surprised you liked that.
And this was very surprising to me as well, because I think the ginger in the sour really cut that tartness that was in it, but it gave that night, like it really rounded it out with just a little bit of cinnamon to warm it up. And I think that kind of played to my liking of spiced ales and amber ales, and the ginger really
stood out. Really like ginger.
I love ginger.
Yeah. And you should try the ginger beer from Atlantic Brewing, James.
Maybe I'll have to try it.
Yeah.
But those are just some of the standouts.
But you were texting me the whole time you were there being like, these people could be professionals. All of these beers are good. Like, I haven't tasted one beer that is not good.
Yeah, I was
this is amazing. And I got the same text, like, that they can all be professionals, like, five times. And I was like, okay, James, I get it. Yeah. So that's how blown away you were by it.
So all you guys at the the homebrew club now can have a good laugh that I was giving the deets to Shannon the
It was like a play-by-play. How excited he was about it.
So kudos to the East Bay Homebrew Club and Steve and all the guys. Everyone was very welcoming and really great to share all the knowledge. One of the members was a BJCP judge. So it got to my beer. So everyone's like, how did your beer fare across the ginger, cinnamon, sour,
and the variety available
selections? It got good feedback. It got better feedback than I had anticipated. I was expecting negative feedback. So I kind of wish there was a little bit of that.
Hate my beer, goddammit.
Pessimist in me that just wants negativity.
You just want negative reinforcement.
And, you know, I was like, well, it was a little less carb than I would have liked.
So you set yourself up to be ridiculed is what you're saying.
No, I mean, everyone was pretty honest with their beers, which I really liked what you think the fault is and if people agreed or not. Mm-hmm. And then I shared the recipe for it just in the percentages, which I really
liked.
Like
your grain bill type?
Yeah, the grain bill, what was in it, what kind of hops you use. Just kind of like if you did anything unusual, mm-hmm. like if you cold crashed for like a year instead of
say a year.
And I really liked that too. So it's no one was worried about, you know, someone's writing down your recipe. It was more of just here's the basics. If you had any questions or if you've tasted a certain thing to try and help each other out of, okay, well, maybe you added a little bit too much of your midnight wheat. So it's a little darker in color than you would have expected. But I really think it was more of just coming together and appreciating different styles of beer. And a lot of people prefaced it with, I know this isn't like a typical porter. I cut back on this malt that's typical in a porter, but my flavor profile, I prefer a less coffee flavor in my porter, or I cut down the specialty malts, which I really loved. And that was probably why that porter I was like, oh my gosh, I have the same tendency.
I have the same flavor palette.
Samesies.
Samesies, twinsies.
No, I didn't say that.
And obviously.
But yeah, the conversations just stuck. I was amazed. It was all beer the whole time. And people could ask questions. And someone came that only had a year of experience that they were like me, that their buddy was in the homebrew club. And actually, he was his neighbor. And he started brewing with his neighbor. And then his neighbor's like, hey, you should come to the homebrew club. So he was there the first time. And he was like, yeah, this is great because I'm just learning how to brew. And I'm asking questions and getting to try all these other people's beer. He's like, this is great.
It's kind of like cheating the system.
Kind of. I mean,
if I had a neighbor
that would literally show me how to brew and then take me to a homebrew club, I'd be all into. Yeah. And, you know, it ranged from brewing experience to like 16 years experience. Mm-hmm. So like they had the full gambit of experience. And as we talked about, they had won a 2019 Melvin Boyle Rumble, which to get to the point of what their other meeting usually entails.
Let's say, how did they all win it, James? Tell us.
They won a one-barrel brewing kettle. So what they'll do is they'll brew a big one-barrel batch at Steve's house. They'll come together for the brew day as a club, and then they'll give each member some of the wort to take home to ferment, and then they'll bring, after it's done fermenting at everybody's houses, they'll bring back some of their wort that they were able to ferment at home and see, to compare notes, see how the different beers came out from the same recipe, the same brew day.
I think that's a cool idea.
I think that's one of the most ingenious things I've ever heard of just, you know, allowing each brewer to take some back to if they have cold temperature control or if they don't. Are they using carboys? Are they using stainless steel fermenters? Are they putting it in a fridge, like in a conical, like all different ways? Or what's their, you know, repertoire like at home? Do they have in the basement? Is it just in their closet? So I'm really interested to see how that turns out on a beer, because I know from experience you can have the same exact recipe, but you can follow all the instructions, but it's going to be a different beer than what the instructions
are. I mean, we've seen that from our brew-offs and recipe sharing that we've done with other home brewers throughout the country. So
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I just want to thank all you guys at the...
All y'all.
I want to thank all y'all at the East Bay Homebrew Club for the warm welcome. And we'll definitely be back. And I think we have a brew day collaboration that we can get in the works.
Yeah. That'd be fun.
Into a Rhode Island, Massachusetts brew day. And also get some more females into homebrewing too. I think that's one of the things that they didn't exactly just say females. They just said they would like people that wanted to learn brewing and not just drink around a table and kind of get drunk. They're not looking for those kind of members. And they were very proud that they were a small group.
Yeah.
And they're saying, you know what? A lot of homebrew clubs, they look for numbers and recruiting. We just want to, you know, have people who are passionate about homebrewing or want to learn and, you know, have a good time that way, not getting drunk at meetings and having conversations where you have to be kind of like a series. You have to watch episodes one through five to be feel included.
Yep.
So I really liked how they did address that as well. But yeah, thanks to Chris and Steve for the invite, and I'll definitely be back. I'm like,
James,
hey,
have fun for sure.
I would definitely join that homebrew club for sure.
And if you're looking to join a homebrew club in your area, you can actually go to the AHA website, and they have a feature where you can type in your location, just like your zip code, and it will show you all your local homebrew clubs. So if you're interested and want to find a group like James, go on and check that out at their website.
Yeah, and also Instagram is a great place and social media because, you
know, saying you go and find
it. If you
have
your homebrewery on there, they can find you on there. You can Google, you can look it up and just see what the club's about, and highly recommend it and check it out. And we can't talk about homebrew clubs, Shannon, without kind of like our list of what we think.
I feel like you've already kind of listed what you feel like.
Well, so what would make you feel included at a homebrew club?
Not being talked down to and made feel like an idiot. That's my very blunt answer. Especially as a woman in homebrewing, I feel like there can be that kind of stigma of like, oh, it's like the same thing with sports. Like, oh, you like football? Like name all the players on this team. Like, that's, you know, I would want an environment where it's not like that, where it's like you are feel like you're an equal,
you're
and nobody's questioning
your
knowledge, or
knowledge.
Yeah, like nobody's like, oh, how many beers have you brewed, or oh, name like top 10 hops. Like, no.
Or on
like,
the flip side, not give you feedback or not be valuable because they think like, oh, like you're a woman. Like,
and I don't want to say like be one of the guys, because that's also, you know, like a sexist comment, but just like to feel part of the group and not self-conscious, like, oh, I have imposter syndrome, I guess, if I shouldn't be there. That's what I said.
Sure. You've been watching way too many crime murder shows for me to understand what you're saying.
Imposter syndrome has nothing to do with crime and murder, but okay, we could talk about that another time. So I think just the inclusivity and just a safe environment to, you know, bring your brews to and just feel like you're going to get equal and honest feedback from a woman's point of view. Yeah. And I think, like you were saying, just not having it be a all-out drinking session where it's like, oh, let's get together and just hurry, like, tell the same stories and be, you know, buddy-buddy, like you're in your backyard on the weekend. Like, it should be, unless that's what you want. I guess maybe some people do like that. But for me, I would want it to be a worthwhile experience. And the more someone drinks, the less likely they're going to give good feedback. So.
Yeah. And I mean, there is a fine line, too, of business and then, like, still having
fun.
Yeah,
just having that balance.
But I think holding members accountable is huge. And also setting the agenda. Mm-hmm. So from the start, they said, hey, you know, here's what we're going through, some quick rundowns, and then we're going to get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept it very concise. And I think that really holds everybody accountable as well to staying on topic. You know what you're going to talk about, but also not fully structured. Straight organization.
Organization, that is a plus in my book for sure. So moving on from the homebrew situation, James, well, I guess we're not really moving on from it.
We're a homebrewing podcast. God forbid
we are no longer talking about homebrewing.
God forbid we don't talk about homebrewing.
We are talking about
an agenda, Shannon.
The art of knitting and how you can knit a koozie. No. Getting away from the club discussion and into your new homebrew gadget area of the agenda.
And so this gadget was sparked off of the collaboration that we've been working on with the Red IPA that is going to be my first BJCP judged beer competition for the AHA's National Homebrew Competition. I've submitted a Red IPA, and this is really my first legitimate competition that I've entered in. And so this collaboration with Brandon really allowed me to kind of gain a little bit of confidence, but also learn, because there's going to be multiple versions of this beer mm-hmm. that I'm going to get to try and see what works, what doesn't work for a red IPA, a style that I love and I've seen less and less of mm-hmm. on the craft beer.
It's kind of phased in and out.
It's kind of phased in yeah. and out, yeah.
Yeah.
But one of the issues I had with my first go at the collaboration beer mm-hmm. was that it just would not hit its final gravity. It was stalled. The yeast was just not having it. I tried, you know, everything that I normally do didn't work. I overpitched, didn't work. Mm-hmm. I repitched, didn't work.
You added yeast nutrient.
I added yeast nutrient, didn't work.
Yep.
Nothing would work that would normally spark that beautiful attenuation that I would get. I hit all my numbers. I had the pH on in the boil.
What's going on?
I hit my starting gravity. Everything was going to plan until
it
fermentation.
Didn't.
And it missed the mark. It would not have met the BJCP guidelines for red IPA. So I'm like, I can't submit this one. It didn't hit the final gravity. It's not within the parameters.
Nope.
So what do? I brew version 2. So
V2.
Brewed V2. And after talking with some people in the brewing industry, talking it through with Brandon, mm-hmm. I think the issue was oxygenating my wort. I've never had an issue with this before. However, this beer...
You've never brewed this beer before.
I've never brewed that beer before. Exactly.
First for everything.
And so I looked around and I'm like, you know what? The best bang that I can get for my buck to try and solve this issue is Spikes Brewing's oxygenation kit. And this is by far one of the best purchases I've made in the homebrewery, and it didn't cost thousands of dollars.
That's good to hear.
And it's simple, and it makes you able to dial in and know exactly how much oxygen you're going to be putting into your fermenter, mm-hmm. which is amazing. You're not guessing. Anyone can rig up something to an oxygen tank, and you're kind of guessing it. Did I over-oxygenate? And did I, you know, how much did I put in? So this little device that Spike has, it works perfectly. It hooks up to just an oxygen tank that I got at our Lowe's.
Is it like a valve? Like what exactly is it?
It's essentially a device that connects to the oxygen tank that then is connected to some tubing with a quick disconnect, a CO2 disconnect. So if you have a corny keg, you know, that gray CO2 connection at the end, and you would just click it onto your fermenter, you would set it to a certain, whatever, how much oxygen you wanted to put into your 5-gallon or 10-gallon batch, which is calculators out there, but it's very simple. You set it to, you turn the knob, turn on the oxygen, and there you go. That's it.
Okay.
So it's essentially just a device to monitor how much oxygen is coming from the oxygen tank to put into your fermenter.
Like,
or if you do it inline post your boil, you can do it that way after you're chilling. So you could either hook it up so that after it goes through your wort chiller or counter chiller, mm-hmm. before it goes into the fermenter, you can have all your liquid run through it. Or I think the easier way is do it from your unit tank fermenter.
Yeah.
And that actually brought across some listener
questions. I was going to say, you got some questions after it.
When I posted the picture of the Spike setup, I got a couple questions. So I'll answer those, because I had these same questions that I found the answers to. So I was like, great. Yeah, I already know. Like, here we go.
Do you want me to ask you the questions, James?
Sure.
Okay. The first question we got is, can you use the same carbonation stone for oxygenation and carbonation? What's the answer, James?
The short answer is yes. And the difference is only that the pore size is going to be a little different, and the uniformity in the pores on the stone are different. But either can be used for oxygen or CO2. So a lot of those uni tanks will come with a carb stone. So you wouldn't have to go ahead and buy an oxygen stone. You could use the same thing. So it's a little bit more porous on one than the other, and the uniformity is going to be different, but the end result is going to be the same.
Okay.
We're close enough where you, unless you're an expert, you wouldn't notice the difference.
Gotcha. Okay. That was question one. Question two was, where should you introduce oxygen into your wort? Like, during what stage of the process?
Yeah. So this, you can either do it after your wort chiller. So if you have a counter chiller, as I mentioned, or a plate chiller set up, you could introduce it there, where you could just incorporate it into your piping or your tubing. And basically you would just be running that wort after it's chilled down to your yeast temp, your yeast pitching temp. You could do it that way. Or like Spike and SS Brewtech and all of these companies, they have the carb stone just as part of the fermenter. So you can just attach this device right to it if you get the Spike oxygenation kit, and you can attach it right to the fermenter and you just oxygenate your wort before you pitch the yeast and you're good to go. And there's some great videos on YouTube as well. Spike had posted a couple on how to use the oxygenation kit, which was really helpful in like assembly. And it's just a great piece of home brewing equipment.
Okay. Well, there's your plug.
That's my plug, Spike. You're listening.
Get on board.
Get on board.
Okay. Well, thank you, listeners, for those questions. We really appreciate it. Always send in your questions if you want us to answer them.
And then we also got a lot of questions on our setup, and a lot of people have been purchasing our exact setup. And just curious on how to set it up, because there's not much instruction on how to set it up. So if you like our setup on our Instagram, feel free to direct message us and we can absolutely help you out, send additional pictures.
Do we need to say like link in comments or DM me for links? That's what people always say. It's so frustrating. I'm like, just give me the information. Okay. Right, they're like Amazon best finds. Just put it in the freaking description.
It'd be a long description, Shannon. It would be too long of all the parts and everything else that you would need.
Well, okay. Well then DM us for links.
Yeah, it would be, it's a lot of dialogue that goes back and forth.
Okay.
But yeah, we're happy to send more pictures if you need it, or just if you have any questions, feel free to direct message us on our Instagram at Double Hop Beat Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And speaking of our system, we've got some brew days coming up, and I have one, you've got a couple.
And, you know, when we talk about brew days and we've talked about the competition beer, and I've actually submitted that, it's going to New York for the first round.
Hotel in New York City.
It's going to its hotel. will be judged, and hopefully the carbonation on it is my biggest concern. Mm-hmm. And I actually was able to use in the October can seamer for the first time, the 12-ounce chuck.
Yeah, I saw that. Good job.
I was able to literally switch between 16-ounce cans and 12-ounce cans by just taking the little black chuck that's on the bottom part of the October, and it comes with the 12, which is basically you take off one of the plastic ring on the top, mm-hmm. you pop that out, you just put the other chuck on top, so it basically
fits.
Allows the 12-ounce can a shorter space between mm-hmm. your seamer and the bottom where your can would rest. And you just plop that on. You can do your 12s, and then you just
plop it off,
and you can do your 16s. And by using the duo filler, I was able to program one side specifically for the 16 and one for the 12.
So fancy.
So as the 16 was filling, I then halfway through
hit the button. You're like,
yeah, I hit the button for the 12. So then by the time I had taken the 16-ounce can off, grabbed a cap, canned it, and moved to the side, the 12-ounce was done. I could take the chuck for the 16 to the 12, put that mm-hmm. on, and then do the other one.
Wow. So you're getting
and then
so
I was like, I'm kind of dumb because I could just do all the 16s, then take the chuck and only do that motion once. So I made a note and I was like, next time.
That was a lot of extra work.
I was like, next time I will just
keep the programming. You probably thought you were so efficient. When
I
you were
did.
Doing,
I
you're like, oh, this is such like, a great system.
I was like, this is amazing. I'm just myself, and I'm able to two hands.
Like, oh my God, look at me go! And then afterwards, you're like, oh, I could have done this better.
Yeah, I texted Brandon the picture of what the red IPA looked like from the filler, and he's like, oh, I hate you. You're just showing off your fancy equipment. And I go, oh no, I didn't intend that. I was just looking so you could see the color difference from the version one from the version two. And he's like, yeah, okay.
Uh-huh.
And that's, I'm like,
likely
yeah.
story, James.
Yeah. I'm like, it's a cool shot, though.
Yeah, it is a cool shot.
And then I also learned you could fill a regular glass underneath it, too.
I mean, it's a filler. It's not just
I know.
A can filler. It's, it fills things.
But
vessels
I'm like, a lot of times we only have three taps in the one kegerator. So I'm like, if we have the keg in the fridge, we just bring the keg out of the fridge and hook it up to that. You could be pouring beers off that all day.
Yeah, that's almost like an interactive experience.
It's cool.
Let people press the button.
It would be. It would be. There we go. Next.
New idea for next Halloween party.
But we have a lot of upcoming brew days. Yeah. Way too many more than we can try and cram in. We tried to do our big 20 or 30 gallon batch of our blonde ale that was iteration mm-hmm. from Gareth and Caitlin's
friend we were brewing, yep.
brew off that we had mm-hmm. done before. And we were going to split it into a blackberry puree, a peach with peach puree, and a blueberry with blueberry mm-hmm. concentrate. So I really wanted to see the differences between using a concentrate or a puree mm-hmm. and kind of what the consistency will be like in the beer. Will it taste different? Like, will we notice, will it have like a kind of like a fake
yeah.
flavor to it? But
we'll see.
I'm
curious to see how strong the blueberry is, because usually concentrate is obviously, it's not as watered down as puree. So I feel like it could be like a boom in your face.
It could be, or could
be. You're going to turn into the girl from Willy Wonka.
I think it's in a 5-ounce bottle. So it says for a 5-gallon batch. So I think it's going to be very, it says to like use 1 ounce at a time to your taste, to taste.
So but like, add it, taste.
So I was like, I guess you could just pour it in. Like if I'm carbonating the beer though, and it's to taste, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go full bore with it. And just
I guess we'll see.
So basically we're brewing the one recipe of mm-hmm. the blonde and then enable to make all these kegs of the different things that we want to try instead of just doing one 30-gallon batch for one thing. And if we don't like mm-hmm. it, we're stuck with 30 gallons.
We're going to do 3 10-gallon.
Yeah.
That's
of 5-gallon kegs.
Sure.
Shan's trying to do the math.
And I was like, that's not my, so
say 20 gallons and you'll have 4 5-gallon.
Okay, because the one's going to be regular blonde.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'll keep gotcha now.
One pure.
I got it. I got
blonde,
it.
Okay. One blackberry. Math, Shannon. We're always doing math. Here we go again.
We said. Yeah. Anything else you're doing, James?
And I need to do a barley wine. I'm like trying to hold off.
I think you should wait until end of summer.
I'm going to need new yeast if I do. So the yeast is going to expire.
But then you're going to complain about the fact that you made it and now it's hot outside and I don't want to drink this barley wine.
Yeah, well, I think I could just bottle it.
How much is the yeast?
I know. It's $15 for the liquid
yeast.
Well,
can you use it for something else and then buy new yeast for the barley wine in the fall?
No.
Okay.
Well, and I want to do the Heady Topper IPA clone brew. So that's probably after the blonde, it'll probably be the Heady Topper, then the barley wine, and then our strawberry root barley.
Well, yeah, I'm going to do my base sour recipe, and then I'm going to do strawberry rhubarb this year because we have a ton in our backyard that grows like crazy every year. So I've been storing that up, and I've actually been going back and forth and would love some input from anybody listening that has made a beer with strawberry rhubarb. And that is if I should do, I've been reading that some people have roasted it and then mashed it and put it in a bag and then kind of infused it that way. But I'm kind of thinking I should make a puree with it and so do some additive sugars, because there is this bitterness to strawberry rhubarb that you can get sometimes. And so to add a little bit of extra sugar in there to cut back on that. So just curious if anybody has made beer with strawberry rhubarb that wants to give their input on which way would be the most efficient to get that flavor without it being too tart, because obviously you're going to get the sourness from the sour base. So just curious if everyone has any thoughts on that. Yeah, so I'll use my base recipe with the that I've done a couple times now, and I will use the Philly sour yeast, which does not contaminate James's fermenters. Like he has nightmares about it.
I do.
So that's why I use the Philly sour yeast, because it doesn't do that.
There we go. So
yeah, so that's what I'm going to do, but probably not until sometime this summer, just because I'm out of pocket for most of the month of June. I'm out of pocket, folks.
So team puree or team?
Yeah, let me know if you have any thoughts about roasting.
And roast.
Cool. That's it for me, James. That's all I got.
Yeah, and then next episode we'll be talking about my trip to Toronto.
Eh?
Toronto, eh?
Eh?
Where I got to visit a lot of great
craft and your brother were really on a brewery crawl.
A private tour, and it was great.
I would say it was a very appropriate brewery crawl for men in their mid-30s.
In bed by 9.
Like, literally, like, it was not... Okay, like, well, we'll talk about it, but right. I think it was tame. But yeah, okay. Anything else for our listeners, James, that you want to instill upon them?
No, good luck to everybody who's submitting all their beers for the National Homebrew Competition. And any feedback, if you've done it in the past and just a learning experience, we'd be happy to learn from you as well of what's worked, what hasn't worked when you've entered these kind of competitions. and hope the birds fly and everything gets to their judging facility safe.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, before we sign off, just want to remind you all that we have merch, so check out the link in our bio. Ooh. And go find all of our products, including our Brew Another Day initiative. And we want to thank you all for listening to this week's episode of Double Hop Beat. If you would like, if you're a home brewer and want to share your story, go on to our Instagram at Double Hop Beat Podcast and send us a direct message.
And remember to rate, review, and subscribe where you listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. That really helps us find new listeners just like you.
We really appreciate it. This has been Double Hop Beat.
Catch you on the brew side.